What is up, and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always with my two co-hosts, John Kegley and David Drogemeyer, three writers from San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for four seasons now, and this is our second with the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. Guys, the draft is 2 days away. The 2019 NFL draft is this Thursday, April 25th, and I mean, we're running out of time to talk about some of these prospects, and I think that kind of got put to the side a little bit more because we have some big news to talk about today that we're going to start the show with. Joey Bosa's fifth-year option has been picked up by the Chargers. Surprise, surprise. He will be with the Chargers at least through the 2020 season, which is obviously good news, and there's no reason why they wouldn't have done that. Also, the Chiefs made news this morning by trading for Seattle defensive end Frank Clark. So we'll get into that in the first segment, as well as giving our own John Kegley's seven-round mock draft in the first segment. We'll go over that. Before getting into prospects, David Long, the cornerback out of Michigan, and also University of Central Florida's Tristan Hill, defensive tackle, to wrap up the show today. All right, guys, well, let's start with Joey Bosa's fifth-year option getting picked up. I don't think there's any argument to be made really on either side here. I think we're all in favor of the Chargers picking up that option and keeping Joey Bosa around as long as possible. I mean, I wouldn't even be surprised if next year, before that even comes to fruition, they try to work out some sort of extension. So we won't spend too long on that subject because, hey, we knew it was going to happen and it happened. No news really there. But there's bigger news as far as the Chiefs making a move and bringing in Frank Clark after deciding to let go of Dee Ford and then giving him a $105 million contract with over $63 million guaranteed. The Chiefs are trading this year's first-round draft pick. They are swapping thirds in this draft, and they are getting a second-round pick, and they're giving a second-round pick to Seattle in the 2020 season. So they're giving up quite a haul here, David, for Frank Clark, Seattle Seahawks defensive end.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Frank Clark is a great pass rusher, but man, that is a lot of capital to give up for a player, no matter who they are. And not to mention just the draft capital, but $105 million to, I mean, one of the decent pass rushers in the league, but would you consider Frank Clark a top 10 pass rusher? I mean, no matter if you do or not, he definitely just got paid like one. So now I do understand, you know, he fits better in a 4-3 than a 3-4, you know, so that's why they would prefer him over Dee Ford. But man, I just think that's a bit of a reach for them. But I'm happy as a Charger fan. I'm happy because, you know, tying that much money up into one player just means it's going to hamstring them in the future, and that means some holes are going to arise. And when you're chasing the Chiefs in the division, holes are what you want.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they obviously let Justin Houston and Dee Ford go, so now they add another pass rusher, but lose the ability to really add another playmaker in the first round of the draft, and that's not going to solve their Tyreek Hill problem. They do get to move up in the third round of this year's draft, so that helps them a little bit. But yes, a lot of money being spent, and it just makes you wonder about Dee Ford and what they didn't see in him that they see in Frank Clark. Two one-year wonders for the most part, both coming off their most successful seasons. But we are here talking about the draft today, and it's not draft season without a couple of mock drafts. And we have John Kegley here, obviously our host, with his own seven-round mock draft. So John, what do you got?
Well, I got to be honest. I bounce around this around a lot still. Even with Wade's pick, are you saying we could get Cody Ford? I can see that happening, but I feel like he'll get picked before us. So in the first round, I feel like we're going to go Dexter Lawrence, the defensive tackle out of Clemson. And then second round, I didn't really like too much about this guy. I feel like he's also a developmental player, but I think it's the best value you're going to get unless they trade out of the second round. And that would be David Edwards, the tackle out of Wisconsin. With his size, I feel like he could actually become a quick developmental player. In the third round, I'm still sticking with Amani Hooker, the safety out of Iowa, even though he has been moving up in some people's boards. I think he could still be there for the Chargers. Fourth round, they're still hesitating on Antonio Gates unless they're waiting until after training camp. So I feel like we could go tight end, and I like Josh Oliver, tight end out of San Jose State. In fifth round, I think this guy is a sleeper tackle, Ole Udoh out of Elon. I feel like he could be that sleeper pick for offensive tackle. In the sixth round, to fill in Tyrell Williams' place would be little Jordan Humphrey, wide receiver out of Texas. A lot of speed. The guy was always in the game, always making some kind of highlight play. In the seventh round, just for a chance at maybe finding that diamond in the rough, I think the Chargers go Easton Stick, the quarterback from North Dakota State.
Well, I love the way that you went about it, because I think even when I've been trying to do mock drafts, you fall into the same issues, you know, when you don't get certain guys where you want it. I like the fact that, you know, if you go offensive tackle and you're not sure on a guy in the second round, like David Edwards out of Wisconsin, that you double up and pick another guy later on. It could be him out of Elon. It could be a guy like Max Sharping out of Northern Illinois, who's been shooting up draft boards lately out of a smaller school, a non-Power 5 school. I like the way you did that. I also have a mock draft coming out tomorrow for Sports Al Dente, a new website I've been writing for, covering only LA sports. I'm excited to have that. But, John, I ran into the same thing as you. A lot of these guys that we liked before they started shooting up draft boards are making it very hard to draft them in these mock drafts, considering where people think they're going now.
It is. At first, I look at my mock draft and I go, okay, no, this is a good little setup I got here. I think I could work with this. That this might be my draft day mock draft. And then I go to look for some other guys I might want to see. And there's new mock drafts out and there's new articles out saying, oh, this guy can now be a top 60 pick. So who I had in the fourth round, now I'm going to be going in the second round. I'm just like, oh my God, can you make up your mind here? Like Dalton Risner was like a top 20, maybe top 25 pick. And now he's like he's fallen down in the second round. So now, well, then now we have no chance at one of those tackles unless we take him as a reach, as it would look like for us, because we took him with the 28th pick. It looked like a reach from basically with him going in the top 10 of the second round. It's so confusing. I don't even know if my draft day mock draft is going to be the same with how much people are moving around.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have a whole different outlook on a lot of these players now, just seeing what these draft boards are looking like now. One of my strategies I've tried to go with is I really want the Chargers, especially if they go offensive tackle, if Cody Ford does find a way to fall to them in the first round. I would love if they double dipped on defensive tackles late in the draft. I mean, really, guys, they have two holes at that position. You need a one technique, really, to kind of be Brandon Mebane's heir apparent and a guy who can come in for him rotationally at the one technique. And you also need a replacement at the three technique with Darius Phylon moving on to Arizona. So I think there's a lot of depth later on in the class. I don't really like the guys going in the second round, Draymond Jones and Rennell Wren. I like them as players, but I don't think that you're getting value for those picks. So I definitely like the strategy of either offensive tackle, if you don't get a sure thing, double dip on that, and defensive tackle, if you're not getting, you know, a guy that's going to solve all of your issues and can play both positions, going back into that in the later rounds as well. So I think you will see some double dipping in my mock draft tomorrow, as you did with John Kegley's today. But let's get into some specific players and talk about Michigan's cornerback David Long coming up in the next segment. All right, guys, now it's time to talk about a position we haven't talked a ton about, and that's cornerback. The only one we've talked about so far besides Michigan's David Long today was Rock Ya-Sin, who we were thoroughly unimpressed with, at least at the value of a first-round pick, and a guy that didn't really fit the system. And that's what my first impressions were of David Long when I saw him, is, hey, this guy is a really good press corner, gets into the face of receivers, and mirrors them down the field. Unfortunately, the Chargers don't run a lot of that. But David, this was a guy that you brought up and a guy that's been in a lot of sleeper picks. Some people even think he's one of the best corners in the country just because of his ability to shadow receivers. What did you see that you liked out of Michigan's David Long?
So for David Long, out of Michigan, 5'11", 196. So, you know, pretty decent size, not great, you know, but a quick twitch athlete. Good speed, good lateral quickness. obviously excels as a man corner. He didn't play a lot of zone when he was in school. He was really just asked to lock down the man in front of him, which he did very, very well. I felt like he had good ball skills and was a willing tackler. And then some crazy stats that I found from one of our sponsors, Pro Football Focus. Of his 18 receptions that he allowed, only three of those resulted in a first down, and only one resulted in a touchdown. He actually had more pass breakups than he allowed receptions. He had 19 pass breakups and only 18 receptions. That is insane.
That is insane. I think that's a great stat to bring up here. I think it shows you what type of player he is, especially in man coverage. He always gets hands on people off the line. He gets right in their face and just lines up under their chin and goes to work. I mean, he wasn't targeted. I think that's one of my biggest drawbacks, is I wish people would have challenged him, especially over the top, more often with his size, and tried to really have bigger receivers kind of go over the top of him. But you didn't see it, and that was mainly because he had such good coverage on players. John, what did you see out of David Long first that you liked?
Well, first off, I noticed a lot of really good pass rush in the Michigan defense that allowed Long to get away with some times where he got beat. There was some plays where I saw that he got beat on a quick slant, and the guy was beat. He had him. It would have been a first down, but there was a sack. And after that, he got bailed out from that, basically. There was also times I saw him get beat deep, and the wide receiver just plain out dropped the ball. It happened. I saw that at least five times in the films I was watching. So, like, the stat that David brought up is good, but it also doesn't mention how many times wide receivers that were open just plain out dropped the ball. Like, didn't get hit by him, didn't get touched. They just dropped a wide open ball that could have been a 7-yard slant completion for a first down, or even a 40-yard completion, maybe a touchdown if they're still running afterward. But I love how well this guy jams at the line of scrimmage. The way he jams a receiver is amazing. I haven't seen that from many of the guys in this mock draft. I haven't seen that from many of these prospects of cornerbacks, and I haven't seen that much in past years either. His ability to jam a receiver at the line of scrimmage and within that 5-yard range, too, is absolutely amazing. But if he didn't get the jam, that right receiver already had a quick step on him and had him beat. And he had to hurry up and play catch up. And there was times where when he did that, he got beat on a stop, like a hook route or something along those lines. And that kind of worries me, because if we have to play Julian Edelman, that's the kind of routes he likes. So I don't know if that exactly helps. If the Patriots find a way to get Julian Edelman freed up from getting jammed and allow him to still find space, that still worries me.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, though. Like, there's not a lot of corners in the league that match up well against Julian Edelman. So, I mean, it's kind of unfair to really put that all on him. I see why that would be a better matchup than what happened last year, but I think that Desmond King would have had a better matchup if they would have went to a little bit more man coverage instead of just playing zone and letting him pick apart the zone. Because Julian Edelman, even though he is quick, he does burst into his routes and get separation very easily. It does not help at all to play zone against him. But yeah, he's a good athlete. He's a very fluid athlete, even if I didn't see a ton of explosion in his play. But I do think he's a very fluid athlete that always seems comfortable, but did get away with, you know, having a lot of drops against him. I mean, he got lucky a few times that I saw that kind of make that stat seem more eye-popping than necessarily it might have been. But I think that kind of production, I mean, not giving up over two catches in all the games, that's not luck, even though some of it was lucky. It's not just pure luck. He is a good player and has really good coverage skills. I do worry about some things. You know, he doesn't have great size. He was boxed out from defenders sometimes and with good length. And I don't know if you could necessarily stick him in the slot, even though you have Desmond King. I don't know if he would work great in the slot, because I don't think he tackles well enough. And that was one of the things that I really had as a knock on him, David, is he wasn't a very physical tackler. He doesn't like to attack the outside of receivers and make ball carriers run back into the middle of the defense like you would want your corners to do. And Gus Bradley loves corners who can tackle. So those are some of the things that I don't like about it. But we're talking about value, David, and even though I know we both have, you know, some knocks on this guy, it's all about getting him at the right time. So if he dropped far enough, I could understand the Chargers going. But on the surface, with his length, with his size, with his inability to really be a physical tackler, I'm not sure that Gus Bradley would like the fit.
Well, for me, what I saw on tape is not necessarily that he wasn't a good tackler, because when he did make tackles, it seemed like he did finish off, and you know, his technique was definitely strong. He didn't necessarily look like he really wanted to do it that often, so that I did see. But some of the other things that wasn't also not really too, you know, I guess high on would be, you know, the limited experience in zone. You know, at Michigan, he just wasn't asked to do it a lot, so we just don't know if he's going to be good in that type of situation. He's not really that great in run support either. And one other thing that, you know, hey, if you're not going to come in and start right away, you got to have some special teams experience or some value. And he has absolutely none whatsoever. So those are a couple of things that kind of concern me when talking about David Long. But hey, we're talking about sleepers here. And so absolutely in the right situation at the right round, there is definite value here in this player.
And John, were there any other things that you saw that you didn't like out of David Long, or any hesitations you would have to draft him?
Well, there was one thing when we talk about not being that great in run support. I didn't really see him shed blocks really well. There was times where if it was a running play, he was stuck on that block. He could not get off that wide receiver. And if you can't Absolutely. Get off a college wide receiver, then there's no way you're getting off an NFL wide receiver who is trained better to do that kind of stuff. So that right there alone is a worry to me. But if we're talking about drafting him, I personally am not looking to get a cornerback in this draft. So it's not so much how good or how bad he is. I'm not looking for a corner. But if we were to get him, I wouldn't be upset about it.
Right. For the right price. I think it kind of goes without saying, right? I mean,
yeah, long as we're not getting, you know, Caleb McGarry, I think he's a pretty good pick in a good situation.
I mean, he's a great cover corner. I just don't know if the Chargers would be able to use him in the best spot, which is, hey, put him out there on his own and play man-to-man coverage and kind of let him have, you know, maybe a cover two system where he has a little bit of help over the top to kind of minimize some of those concerns that you have about maybe his deep speed or possibly getting out-jumped by receivers in plays like that. Because I think his instincts were good. I think his route anticipation was good. But I just don't know if he's necessarily a good fit on the Chargers defense, which is important to remember. But there is another guy I want to get into, a very polarizing guy that will definitely have his draft stock fall because of it. And that is Tristan Hill out of the University of Central Florida coming up next. All right, guys, let's get into another defensive tackle. This time it's a guy that doesn't have a lot of hype surrounding him, and that's University of Central Florida's defensive tackle, Tristan Hill. He's a guy that is kind of in a weird situation because he was a starter his first two seasons, and then Scott Frost left after their undefeated season and had ups and downs with the coaching staff, I guess, to say the least, but ended up coming off of the bench more last season, but also still had his most productive season. So I think you saw what happened when he was actually going at full blast all the time. And there's a lot to like about this guy, at least on the field. I mean, he's an explosive player that gets off the line of scrimmage well, very quick, penetrates gaps even sometimes to his detriment, but always plays hard. I think one of the best comments that I saw about this guy when reading up on him was a quote from Joe Marino saying, "Plays every snap like his life depends on it." And I thought that was accurate for Tristan Hill, David. It just always seems like he was playing at 100 miles an hour.
Yeah, I mean, when I was watching him, it looked like his hair was on fire. It just seemed like he was always giving full max effort. His hands were always staying busy, had good pop. I mean, just loved the hands. The hands were violent, you know, and it really helped him swim and kind of get through blocks, get through double teams. And he's for me, he's good for a couple of impact plays per game, at least for all the games that I watched. I mean, he came in there and he changed the game on a couple of different occasions, which, you know, hey, when you got a defensive lineman, I mean, they're not necessarily known, you know, I guess all the time for making game changing, game wrecking type of plays. But if you can get a couple of those from your interior defensive lineman, then, man, that's a definite plus.
It is a definite plus. And to kind of back up what you're saying, I mean, he had 10 and a half tackles for loss coming off of the bench in 2018 and not being a full-time starter or not really ever being a starter last year. So that's definitely impressive. I think his top end, he could be a very good disruptor on the interior. John, were there anything as a player that you like from Tristan Hill on the field?
So I saw a lot of memories of like Jamal Williams back in the old Charger days with how he was able to just get penetration and disrupt that running game and even get into the quarterback's face sometimes. He had a lot of power and was penetrating gaps pretty well. I didn't see him control gaps when he was supposed to pretty well, and I think that allowed for quarterbacks to escape that ran, which is a lot of quarterbacks in the NFL these days, but that's something that can easily be fixed by teaching him his own gap control or even just sending another linebacker to be the spy while he uses his strength to get back in. There's not many guys you can find that can disrupt the backfield like this guy can. I also liked how that quick off-the-snap pop that he had to hit an offensive lineman. He always got his hands where he wanted them before the other offensive lineman could get where he wanted to put his hands. And that alone means he's got leverage already on that player. And that alone is something that you can't find even in the late round. This guy, I think, was projected to go around the fourth, fifth round area, and his stock is rising from what I've heard too. So to find a defensive lineman down there that can get his hands where they need to be before the offensive lineman can is a really good find.
Well, and that's the thing with somebody like this. I mean, you'd rather have a guy that penetrates gaps almost too well at times, a little recklessly, than a guy that can't penetrate them at all. It's a lot easier to get those under control than it is to teach someone how to be able to get through a gap with that velocity. But that leads well to the cons, because his playing style is out of control. He plays recklessly, David, and a lot of times he's overrunning tackles and creating holes on that defensive line just because he gets through so quick and it plays without his balance a lot of time and ends up on the ground.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to rein in the aggressiveness for sure. He just needs to be more controlled. He needs to keep his eyes on the ball, too. He needs to focus on the ball and not so much on the offensive line in front of him. He gets too caught up in those personal one-on-one battles, and kind of sometimes it seems like he forgets to go get the football. And, hey, I mean, as a defensive lineman or a defensive player, period, your job is to stop the ball from moving forward. So he needs to work on some of his awareness as well as a defensive lineman. But to me, I mean, these flaws seem like they're pretty coachable. And if he's there in like the fourth round, then I have no problems or issues with the Chargers picking him up at that spot.
Yeah, and I think as a player, I think that's where he fits. You know, the Chargers are picking very late in the fourth round because of all the compensatory picks that were given out. There's a 40-spot gap between their third-round pick and their fourth-round pick. So it's not exactly like they're picking very high in the fourth round. They are going to see a lot of names get taken off the board ahead of them at that spot. So I liked a lot of what I saw from him, but he runs into a problem like a lot of defensive linemen too with his leverage. When he gets the leverage, he's great. I mean, there's no doubt about that. But how often is he getting his leverage? He's often the first to make contact, but at the same time, what is he doing with it? You know, sometimes he's going through wildly and overrunning plays and opening up gaps, and that's obviously not a good thing. So I think, yes, you do have to try to taper that, but at the same time, can you rein him in? Can you keep his pad level low without losing that explosiveness off the line of scrimmage at the point of attack? I'm not sure that he could necessarily go in and be your anchor at the one technique right away and hold his own against double teams. I didn't see a lot of that. He has the ability to split them at times, but there's definitely some decent questions of him as a player, not just the off the field concerns that John was talking about with us in the pre-show, where he's had a tendency to be a little bit of a locker room cancer in the last season. And John, that is a concern when you're talking about drafting a guy into a locker room that seems to be getting along very well.
Yeah, the Chargers locker room seems to be having fun with each other. You don't see much drama going around like you did back in the Mike McCoy era when guys were purposely faking injuries to miss games because they didn't want to play in that environment. And so if you have a guy that's going to be a locker room cancer, you kind of don't want to bring it into that and ruin it, that progress that you've made. I even saw somewhere, I don't want to use this, but I kind of have to, that because there's no name to it, but it said an NFL scout said that he's a very opinionated guy and is not really easy to coach. I've also seen a lot of articles that have said that he likes to argue with the coaches. There was even one that said his work ethic at practice tends to lack, but you wouldn't tell if you watched it on the field. So, I mean, just something like that kind of worries me. It makes me want to avoid him just because I don't want to take the risk of having that Keyshawn Johnson versus John Gruden type of issue in our locker room or even on our sidelines. Like, his talent's great, but I just don't know if his head's in the right spot.
And I think it's a legitimate question mark. I mean, I think that whoever you ask is going to give you a different opinion on, hey, you know, how much of an issue is this? Because it's not exactly something that can be proven by running a 40-yard dash. You know, it's not, there's no numbers to what kind of concerns people have about your character. I mean, I will say that at least as far as no legal issues and drug issues, you know, popping up and are popping on a drug test, things like that, that is nice. But at the same time, you do have a very tight-knit locker room, and I do think it's a legitimate concern. For me, with Trista Hill, I don't think you can put all of your eggs in that basket as far as the defensive tackle is concerned. I wouldn't be okay with it if he was the only one out of this draft class that the Chargers came away with, because I don't think he's a fix-all type of player, and he only, and I don't know if he gives you very much out of the three technique necessarily. So I do like his upside as a player, and like everything, for the right price. If you're getting him on the fifth round and you already took a question mark defensive lineman, maybe in the third round, a guy like Gerald Willis or someone like that, even Rennell Wren, who you're not necessarily fully sold on, I would like him as maybe a secondary option. But I think that is paramount when you're drafting a guy like Trista Hill. But that is going to wrap things up for today's show. Thank you for joining us for all of our draft coverage. And just know that we have another show coming out tomorrow morning, focusing more on late round picks and sleepers that we like. So we're excited to talk to you guys about that. And the draft is tomorrow, guys. Get excited. And we will also be back with you on Friday to discuss who the Chargers selected in the first round, if they make a selection and don't trade out of it, and talk about some guys that we liked that got picked earlier than the Chargers could grab him, and some of the other questionable decisions that will surely be made in the first round of the NFL draft. So I'm excited to get into that. But until then, make sure to follow us on Twitter at LockedOnLAC and to like the Facebook page Locked On Chargers so you can get involved with all the conversations we have on there. Also, when the draft coverage is over, we do have some voicemails we'll be getting into, but for now, we need to keep focusing on these prospects that we have. But you can call the Locked On Chargers voicemail line at 323-524-7924, and your voice will get on the show. Give us your reactions to the Chargers pick. Give us who you think the Chargers should select in the first round, and we'll get your voice on the show. But until then, subscribe to us wherever you get your podcast from: Himalaya, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. You will find the Locked On Chargers podcast. Make sure to rate and review. We really appreciate it. But we will talk to you guys on draft day. Take it easy and go Bolts.